Welcome to Voice Rising with Kara Johnstad. Enjoy weekly conversations with leading luminaries, pioneering visionaries, singers, poets, musicians, and sound healers as we explore the profound role our voice plays on the path to self-realization and global enlightenment. The internationally acclaimed singer, composer, author, healer, recording artist, voice expert, creator of Voice Your Essence, and founder of the School of Voice, Kara Johnstad uses her extraordinary spiritual gifts to empower others. Everything in this world vibrates. Everything has a frequency. A pioneer in the field of voice work and transformational songwriting. Her breakthrough methods are helping thousands of people worldwide fine-tune their body-mind-spirit system and unlock the energetic frequencies of limitless creativity, health, and abundance. Share your voice, ask your questions, join in the conversation. Receive life-changing, positive transformation and rise together to create a sound world. And here's your host, Kara Johnstad.
Hi, everybody. Yes, welcome to Voice Rising. In studio with me today is Rhiannon, a vocal artist with a vision of music as a vehicle for innovation, healing, transformation, and social change. A vibrant, gifted singer, performance artist, composer, and master teacher. Rhiannon has been bringing her unique and potent blend of jazz, world music, improvisation, and storytelling to audiences for over four decades. And when she's not touring, she lives and works on Leonani Farms on Hawaii Island, growing food and cultivating the arts through farming. So aloha, Rhiannon. It's so
aloha.
Great. It's so good to have you on the show. Yeah, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Beth. Thank you for having me.
Yes. So I want to dig into music and transformational sound and all that good stuff. Also, you are a master of improvisation and keeping the voice playful and flexible. And let's just start in an easy place to begin with. What about your childhood? Do you remember while you were growing up, being in a very inspired place to sing? Were you surrounded by lots of music and things that made you want to dance and sing out loud?
I was raised on a farm on the border of South Dakota and Nebraska, so very much in the middle of the prairie. Mm. And my parents were there on the farm, but they also were very interested in the arts. I was so blessed to have that.
Yeah.
So I had a lot of time to wander around the different pastures and places by myself, so I sang out loud with no one to tell me it was too much. Mm-hmm. And that was really important to just develop my voice in a natural kind of way. I'm just thinking what a gift that was. And they were encouraging and helped me have some lessons early on. So I was really blessed to have the opportunities to work with my voice as a young person, both in lessons, but also really out in nature, feeling how my voice was really part of the environment I was in.
Right. And probably being a prairie girl, you could really let your voice travel very, very far.
Right? I could.
Just let it fly.
It is very important, the landscape, I think, right, of learning to sing.
Yeah. So your writing voice, you have a book out there, your writing voice is considered to be just as beautiful as your singing voice. And I was wondering what your secret is. Some people can just sing, others can just write. You do it all. What's your secret to getting to sing off the page? Yeah.
I've been singing a lot longer than I've been writing. However, I've written a lot of lyrics. I've kept track of my life a lot by writing and write to other people. I don't feel nearly as confident in my writing as my singing. My singing is like just a natural. It's been with me since being a child, so it feels very normal and natural to me. I worked hard on that book. It was 8 years, really. And I felt what turned the corner is I got myself a very good editor who helped me understand that I had some good ideas and I had these habits. So she helped me look at my writing habits and just go in and start stripping away those things, which then helped the strength and important words come through. That was really powerful for me. It was really having a writing teacher. And yes. I love that book. I feel so happy that I was able to get that book out there. And what I didn't understand, I think, as a young person, was how much writing I was going to want to do as an artist, not only lyrics, but I have to write copy for workshops and right. copy for my website and blogs and all these continuing opportunities to express what I do in my work. And I know you know from the work you do that it's mm-hmm. quite difficult to write it and not fall into the little constructs that are that don't actually mean very much. They're words that get repeated and used a lot, to try to find yeah. the more unusual words and to really look down into what it is I'm trying to say and get to the truth of it.
And to understand that the speaking voice and the singing voice is a different, it is different than the writing voice. In conversations, we can say and maybe until mm-hmm. we get to the point, and in a book we can't. So it takes a lot of awareness.
Yeah, that's what I mean, the writing habits, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
I realized I was saying things like that instead of describing actually what that meant. So it made my writing much more colorful, and I'm sure it changed my singing and speaking as well. It got me thinking more about the extra words.
Yeah,
specific
yeah.
words.
Yeah, exactly. You're very connected to rivers, I understand, by reading your writing, and I thought you might appreciate, maybe you know it, but John O'Donohue wrote an unfinished poem before he passed, and it said, "I would love to live like a river flows, carried by the surprise of its own unfolding." And
beautiful.
So what are your thoughts? We're talking about the writing voice. We know about the spoken word or the speaking voice. We also know about the intuition, the inner voice. We know about the singing voice. Is voice for you like a channel, like a river that has many tributaries that flow then out into the world in all their different shapes and forms?
Well, I would like to mess with that metaphor a little bit if I could. I grew up on the Missouri River. My dad's farmland was on the bottomland, what they call the bottomland, which is mm-hmm. that when the river would flood, as it did enormously this spring there in the Missouri, his land would all be covered. And then when the waters went away, it would leave behind all this really treasured soil. So mm-hmm. I grew up right on the banks of a river, and the benefits and the difficulties of being on a flowing body of water like that. I swam a lot, so I like to be in water. I used to organize I probably still do, my workshops based on if there was a body of water nearby, either mm-hmm. a lake or a river or the ocean. I like to be in the water. I get my inspiration. If I really need to get myself together before a concert, I go take a shower or a bath. I submerge in water. It really helps me a lot. So I know there are water images in my writing, and the idea of the vocal river came from one of my students in the workshop we were doing. We were talking about what it was to be in a river together. And then someone said, well, what about being in a boat together? We'd be in this actual vessel together where we'd have to we'd have to paddle in order to get where we were going. And then that image was so strong, the idea of needing to paddle together, needing to organize the direction we were going and make sure the vessel stayed strong. So that's why the book was named The Vocal River. And, of course, rivers flow into the ocean. And rivers, as you're saying, come from these small tributaries, like gathering ideas, gathering inspiration, gathering studying of musics. And then you go into this bigger river, which is very powerful. You'd better be pretty together by the time you get in the river. If you know rivers, they're pretty dangerous. They've got big currents. And so my wish with my students was to be strong by the time we got to the river and then go out into the wide, wide ocean, which is vast. And now I'm living on this island out in the middle of the Pacific. These islands are the farthest from any continental landmass on the planet. So now I'm really done it now.
Yeah, and your body is basically made up of so much of water too, right? So that's the body of water starts right where your voice is, you know, dwelling within. Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. So continue.
Well, I was thinking, and a lot of what makes music really work are the music skills, which have a lot of kind of floating and current to them. I'm thinking of melodies. Really beautiful melodies have this kind of natural flow to them. Mm-hmm. When you hear them, it's very beautiful, the way they flow. And rhythm makes things flow in a particular tempo or direction. So the metaphors are very powerful for music being right in that watery flow.
Right, in a flow. And when we're in that movement and we are flexible and fluid, it seems like the more fluid our bodies are, the less stagnant they are, the more presence we have, the more alive we become. So you are considered by many, many people to be a master of improvisation. How do you think improvisation helps us to think outside the box and help us to gain life skills, not only for our music and performance, but also for our day-to-day life that we have to master?
Oh, thank you for asking me that. I believe that improvisation is a life skill, not just a music skill. Of course, I know you understand that. But really a daily life skill that everyone uses but might not necessarily think of it that way. So when I was singing as a child, one of the things I did was walk around the pasture and make up songs. I didn't have repertoire. I just was inventing songs. It was as natural as singing, as natural as breathing. So that's the way I started. And then I wrote songs and learned songs and sang songs. And all the while, this improvisation was in there, and the study of jazz allowed me a kind of improvisation, which is what they call scat singing, or changing the melodic line of a song every time you sing it. That was really good practice to understand that I could use a form and then start to adjust it, and not starting from a blank space, but starting from a song form. So somewhere after singing jazz for quite a long time, I had this feeling that I wanted to let go of repertoire entirely. So I had some beautiful musicians around me who were wanting to do that as well. So we started doing gigs where we just started. And one of us would start each piece. So it wasn't always, even though I was the leader of that band, I was not starting all the pieces. I was getting my inspiration from everybody. And we did these completely improvised concerts. I was thrilled at how beautiful that was, how actually we could as a group, because of our understanding of certain chord progressions and musical ideas, we could make decisions about chord changes, chord progressions, that would actually take us to the bridge or take us to a new segment of the song and not falter, actually create compositions that had real musical integrity. Before that, I had worked a long time with Bobby McFerrin, who I met in the early 80s. And the music I did with him was in this group called Voicestra, which was all improvised 13 voices. And Bobby was giving us the construct. He would give the parts, and then people might solo over it, but he was essentially leading the group. And his musical concepts are so beautiful, so profoundly worldly and very spirit-based that I learned huge amounts. I would say he's the main teacher in my life. I just love him. So I got to do that while I'm still singing with him. So that's about 40 years of singing with him. But all along the way, I would be improvising by myself at times during concerts. I would just take off and improvise. So I feel like improvising has been a thread through my entire life. And I believe that it was when I started teaching improvisation that I really began to understand it more. Because, you know, in order to teach, you've got to understand your subject. And you may think you understand it, and as soon as you teach, your students will ask you something you hadn't quite thought through. How beautiful is that? So I turned my teaching over completely to improvisation. I decided there were other people who were doing vocal training and technique and song study. I wanted to figure out how to teach people how to improvise, not only as a way of writing music, but actually to improvise on stage alone or with a group of people. How to create shared leadership kind of improvisations where anybody could make a move and everybody else would follow it. So that meant that in my studies with my students, they allowed me to develop my concepts. I would figure out, okay, this study needs to come before this. This needs to be embellished. This needs to be simpler. This can now be more complex. And little by little, I realized I was writing a book and I was developing a whole system. And of course, I wasn't doing that alone. I was constantly meeting with Bobby and feeling more and more ideas from him. I have two singers that I work with a lot, Joey Blake and David Worm, who are beautiful improvisers, and we taught together a lot and developed more concepts. So as with any teaching, I didn't do it alone. I was constantly being inspired by my colleagues. I also work with dancers a lot, and watching them move, watching them figure out how to improvise with their body in space was hugely inspiring to my vocal practice. So I have spent my life, once I realized it was about improvisation, it clarified my study and my concerts. I'm so grateful for those years on the farm in which it came so naturally. And what I want to teach people, whoever I teach, is that it is not out of the box. It's actually very, very normal, everyday kind of idea. It's something that goes a bit underground as we get older and get more fears about it. But watching people learn to improvise, little by little, I can see them coming back to their true selves.
Their true authentic voice. Is that also helpful when they can start going into different role playing or maybe owning also their ragged stories or their rough and scary parts? So often in voice, people are taught that it has to be pretty or perfect. And maybe if we're, you know, doing sounds of, I'm just throwing it out here now, the wind or a chainsaw or a hammer or working with the voice in a different way, it can be very freeing, very liberating for many people that have just thought in the concept of I need to sing soprano or alto in a choir, right? So the voice can really find that full frequency or the full spectrum, which it has.
You're so right. What a beautiful way of saying that. Yeah, to explore sound, and not just singing, but to explore sound,
exactly,
is really natural and normal. Children do it constantly as part of their growing and learning how to use their voice, and then it gets more, civilized or bound by the culture that we're in. But yes, it's really important. So there are certain steps along the way when I'm working with people where I encourage them to make sound, to explore all the ways their voice can sound, to be sure they aren't hurting their voice, to listen for how it feels inside their throat when they make certain sounds, and then to see if they can have that sound but maybe adapt it so it doesn't hurt their instrument. But the human voice can make lots of kinds of sounds, be so expressive. I love that. And you know, when people study the voice, everything comes up because the voice lives in the body. So of course it holds all that memory, it holds all the grief and the pain and the joy of a lifetime. So it's a very emotional work. I realized early on that I was not a therapist and that I did not want to go full on into being a therapist with people. I didn't feel like that was my work. However, I trust that the music has a way of being therapy for people.
Yeah.
That if someone starts to have a lot of feeling, I usually encourage them to try to keep breathing and keep singing. Not to try to stop and tell me the story of why they're crying, but to see if they can sing it, to see if they can keep tone coming or sound coming. Because I think it's more raw, it's more... It doesn't just turn into memory. It turns into now. And they're able to, maybe later they need to tell the story to us or to someone else. Maybe they need to go to a therapist and talk that through. But I feel like my job is to translate emotion and memory and reality of now into song, into improvised music.
I love that so much because so often when the tears do come up, which they might come up in this work, the voice tends to, the first impulse I think is to close to protect the heart, right? So we often know that if there's sadness or grief, that there's a knot in our throat. And many people in that moment, they do stop singing. And I also do the same thing. I encourage them to keep on breathing and sounding. Also, it gives an incredibly powerful message to your voice of trust, right? I mean, if you stop singing, then the voice, I don't know, for me, it's like if I keep on singing, no matter what is moving through my body, the voice knows I'm with you. I am with you. And the voice is, you know, it's like, it's a friendship for me. It's like a two-way, I don't know, for me, my voice guides me and I guide my voice. And it seems like some very odd relationship, but that's how it is. It's very deep and it's very profound. And it's very empowering to see people then turn grief and sadness or situations into tone and then feel liberated after that. So again, I'm not saying I'm a therapist either, and I think, you know, there's a place for everything, but I do know also in our work as artists that memory and feeling come up. Also bliss and ecstasy.
Oh.
It's not only sadness.
Yes, no, absolutely. Well, also, of course, the voice is a vibration. It comes, the sound comes on waves out of our bodies, and that very vibration is so good for equalizing the body, whatever emotion it's feeling. So if you can manage to keep singing, you keep that, you start vibrating your bones. Your whole body goes into some kind of motion that's so, in a way, calming and opening. So it's very powerful, which, of course, is why the sound waves can enter somebody else's body in the same way. So as singers, the power of singing on sound waves and knowing that we're penetrating the air around us and also the humans, we just go kind of right through people with the sound. That's right. That's pretty powerful work. So, of course, there are times with the singers where it's an emotional time and everybody talks about something, but I try to keep those in a certain kind of time framework. I try to make sure that everybody gets a chance to share. And the bottom line is we go back to the music. We go back to the vibration.
Right. Ranam, you have a practice that you use in the group, which I love. The First Nation tribes have a tradition called give away. And the most valuable is saved to give away. And the hoarding is not looked well upon. And I understand a little bit about your work that you integrate that practice of generosity and giving a line or a melody or a rhythm away into the group, into the collective, giving the beauty, not keeping it for ourselves, just sharing it. Well, is that true?
How beautiful this question you're proposing. I'm from South Dakota, so the First Nations tribes there are very powerful in the story of that place. So I believe I grew up with those vibrations all in the air, and I'm very honoring of those traditions. One of those is that idea of giving away. So literally in the year-long practice that I do called All the Way in the third session, when they know each other quite well, I ask them to bring to the third session some gift. It might go to anybody. They don't know who's going to get it. So some gift that has a good strong meaning for them. It can be something they buy, but it could also be something they have in their home that they treasure. And when they look at it or talk to that, it says, okay, I'm ready to go, or please give me away. because I think that's also part of it, that peace has to agree to that, knowing that all things are alive and we're in constant collaboration with everything that's alive. So then when we're singing, it requires generosity. We're sharing breath, for God's sake, the very essence of life. So I that concept of generosity is, to me, fundamental, along with forgiveness, along with other kind of concepts like that. I don't find them separate from musical concepts. In order to sing, you've got to open your body. You've got to open your heart. You've got to open your mouth. And when you put it out in the air, it's free. It doesn't belong to you anymore. You've offered it to the circle, to the world, however. And when everybody in the circle does that, when there is not a competitive quality, but a sharing quality, everybody thrives from that. We all know that aspects of the music business have a lot of competitive nature that makes people withhold, that makes them feel like they've got to own their concept or their song or their idea. And I understand how that happens. But how much more wonderful is it if we're able to really offer from the depths of our heart what we really want to offer fully and completely? So in my classes, I start right from the beginning. We always work in a circle. And a lot of the early exercises, everybody offers a piece. There's an original idea, someone changes it and offers a piece. The original idea, someone changes that and offers their piece. So that we start getting the idea from the beginning that everybody has a piece to offer. And we are all part of the circle. And everybody offers a bit differently, given our story, our memories, our actual physical body, our musical knowledge. And as we listen to it, we see that everybody's is different. And there's a way that people can start to think, oh, my God, theirs is better than mine, or I don't know what I'm going to do. So mm-hmm. I try to encourage people not to prepare what they're going to offer. That's really fundamental, and that's so beautiful about improvisation. Because even if you think you know what you're going to offer, and you make this plan about what you're going to offer, when it comes to you and you open your mouth, you're very liable not to do that thing. Something happens, it doesn't come out the way you heard it in your mind, and then you get very confused by this foreign idea coming out of your mouth. So I keep saying to people, don't plan. Don't plan. Don't even bother. Your job is to listen to the person who's singing right now. Give them your full attention and love. That will help them sing better. It will keep you from being in your mind, and it will make you really a part of the circle. So that's how we start. And every exercise I teach really tries to have that concept of it's all about all of us. And, you know, I know that I didn't come up with that alone. I know that that's as old as circles are, that's as old as cultures are, that's as old as tribes. And I know I learned that partly from Bobby. The idea of Voicestra was one for all for one. Nobody's ego gets to sit out in the front. We're creating this together. And that was huge, because it's one thing to do it by yourself when you're alone practicing, but you know how it goes when you get on a stage. All of a sudden, the ego just like, does the audience like me? Am I doing well enough? That whole construct is just not so useful. So thank you for offering that idea. Gratitude is another one, is another concept. Constantly just be grateful for the way the thing is going, which stops us from getting caught in, did I do it well enough?
Right, being grateful for that moment of sharing, right? I think a lot of the stage fright comes from people that are not really connected. Like you said, they're more trained. I mean, we are also trained, right? I always tell people we're conditioned so much when we go into schools. We're getting the check marks and the checks on what we're doing wrong and not what's going right. So we're trained at a very young age to think of only the mistakes, and it's such a gift to have practices where we can relax into, you know, really opening our full voices, becoming more bold, becoming stronger, becoming more vulnerable, becoming more fragile, becoming more everything, all of the above, right? I think yes. It's very beautiful not to work on connectivity and the collective and not on the competition. And I appreciate that also as a singer and as a voice coach, to really uplift others so that our whole humanity can profit, is the wrong word in this moment, but benefit from these practices, because we need more singing circles. We need
well, the
more,
fact is,
more, yeah, yeah.
The fact is the singing just gets better because of that.
Right. Right. Yeah, exactly. So the world is united in voice. As we know, a scream is the same penetrating, piercing scream in Japan and in Hawaii and in America and in Moscow, Russia, whatever. It's the same sigh. It's the same giggle. It's the same laughter. I was curious because when people are moving through emotions, is it easier in the beginning to give emotion and melody and rhythm simply sound before you put it into words, or do words give the containers that we might need? Does that make sense to you, this question?
Oh, yeah. Because, it's a beautiful question.
Yeah.
Well, I grew up singing, but when I was in college, I was studying classically still, and I knew that was not really my path. I got pretty discouraged about what I was going to sing, and I changed my major to acting. So my college degrees and then my whole 20s were about being an actor. I moved to New York, and I was going to be an actor. So I got this benefit of this study of acting, which is much of that is about the body. and right. how this how sound comes out of the body, and not just language, but all kinds of sound. So the preparation for a role has a lot to do with sound. So that I'm sure has changed my singing a great deal. I didn't know really that I was going to come back to music, but I'm very grateful that I did and that those years of acting are in there, because I have a lot of feeling about how important lyrics are, how wonderful when they're really just the right words, and also that sometimes it's beautiful to make a song that has no words. You know, the whole concept of Voicestra is this language that's international. It's Boyeje Guania Labade Tondusu di Madukorum Hawe Hawe. This invented language that everybody does differently, but that if I'm doing a circle song and I'm giving a part, I'm not just going to give it on vowels. I'm going to construct a kind of language pattern which makes it easier to learn the part, and also kind of tells us what part of the world we might be in. So I'm not only appreciating language, but also what I would call this personal language, mm-hmm. and then also mm-hmm. just sound, just nature sounds or breath sounds or shapes. All of it, for me, has connection.
Are we attracted, each and every one of us, based on our journey that we've had to certain melodic patterns? Are there certain, you know, people that want to stay in a very small range and other people that want to do huge jumps and dips and dives? And do you experience people drawn to different types of melodies?
I'm sure that's cultural and age specific as well. Mm. I mean, I don't know. I'm 74, so I grew up with incredible melodies in the in the air, on the radio, just the songs that I grew up learning. But I was also raised Catholic, so I sang Gregorian chant, which is all la da 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 da, just these very simple melodies. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure it's based on what you grow up with, and then as you get older, where you travel and what music you hear in your travels, what other scales you start to hear. If you travel to India, then your whole mind will be blown by the microtonal scales. Or if you go to Eastern Europe, into the Balkan region, all of those sounds and different scales and time signatures. So I would wish for people that they would have as big a worldly experience of melody and rhythm as possible. It just seems like, why not? So what I would wish is that the radio used to have so many more kinds of music, and now a lot of the different, like Pandora, the different kind of music systems you can listen to are refined into a certain style, so you don't necessarily get out of that box. Right. I think our ears want to hear vast kinds of music, so that you might hear an African tribe of women that sing, they sing really through their nose, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. or Asian sounds that are really different. I love all that.
Yeah, or overtones.
Overtones.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Nice. Yeah
really.
So how do you think we are in these, these powerful times in the moment? How do you think we can use our voice to shape the future when we're perhaps not always on stage? How can we as a humanity use our voice to really set an intent and shape the future, design the future we'd love to attract?
That's a really beautiful question. Thank you for these really wonderful, unusual questions. I understand my music as a spiritual practice. Mm-hmm. Somewhere along the way, I realized that, and that was so clarifying. So it's all the time a spiritual practice, not just when I'm with my students or on stage, but all the time. My voice, the gift of being able to sing, is my way of growing my spiritual life. And I take that very seriously. And when I talk with my students, I make sure that we understand that and that my students work with their own version of that being their spiritual practice. every time I'm on stage, I consider that I'm praying.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean it's all serious at all. It can be very joyous, funny, guffaw, whatever, but I'm praying. I'm in there. I'm so grateful to be having the opportunity to stand on stage, and I know that is a gift and that is a responsibility.
Right.
When I'm with my students, that's also prayer. I'm sure that we go deeper and deeper into what it is to be humans in our fragile state. I also think we have the responsibility to choose lyrics
that are empowering.
That are empowering, and sing for the world. Pull in as much as we can of the politics of the world and transform it into music, and be strong and grow ourselves into mighty spiritual beings.
Beautiful. Thank you, Rhiannon, so much for being with us today. It's my honor and delight to explore transformational voice work with you.
Is that your voice, Kara?
Yeah, that is my voice. This is a
beautiful
a message of hope.